For orientation, basically, they told us how long each class would last, how much time was allowed between class, how often we would have certain classes, and blah, blah, blah. At the time, it was a lot to take in. I mean, how was I going to go from class to locker to class in only 3 minutes? The building was huge. And what about my bladder? Instantly, the words from my former math teacher came to mind. Train your bladder. Anyway, we eventually participated in some icebreaker-type games. I became acquainted with at least one student, met the principal and other staff members. After orientation, I was hopeful about the school year. In Numbers chapter 13, the Lord commanded Moses to send 10 men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites. So Moses selected 12 leaders from each tribe to scout out the land. Joshua, son of Nun, was selected as one of those spies. Before leaving, Moses gave him the name Joshua, which means Jehovah is his help. After 40 days, the Israelite spies returned with a discouraging report. They said, "These people are too strong for us to attack them. The land is good, but we are like grasshoppers compared to those giants." Joshua was one of the two spies who gave an encouraging report. He stood firm in believing that God's people could certainly take possession of the land because he knew God was with them. We find that in Numbers chapter 14 that the Israelites were ready to send these two to death with stones for trying to be hopeful. In verse 9, Joshua pleaded with the misguided Israelites to not allow their fear to cause them to rebel against God. In verse 9, it says, "Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will devour them. Their protection is gone. The Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them." Well, at this part of the story, it didn't go well for God's people, because eventually, God had to step in on the situation. And in short, the people were punished for their lack of faith, and as a result, they spent another 40 years wandering in the desert. Back to my story. When school actually started last August, I was really, really scared. As I stood outside, waiting to go in, I wondered, would the teachers be nice? Would I find friends? Would I be accepted or fit in at this new school? When I entered the building at first, I felt overwhelmed. But after a while, I felt less anxious as the day went on. A few kids said hi, and I said hi back. Eventually, throughout the school year, I gained new friends. I joined the volleyball and soccer team. I went on a couple ski trips. I attended a few cooking classes, and I visited some museums. Overall, it had been a good year, and I became quite involved. My grades were great, and I had a good reputation among peers and with my teachers. Back from where I left off, with the Israelites, at the end of wandering in the desert for 40 years, Moses was dead, and Joshua was appointed the new leader of the Israelites. In Joshua chapter 1, verses 1 through 9, God is instructing Joshua to have courage in leading the Israelites over to the promised land. Three times in these verses, God tells Joshua to be strong and of good courage. You see, Joshua had a very important task in leading God's people. There was no room for fear or discouragement. God was asking Joshua to do what he had already prepared him to do. Joshua's heart was filled with courage because he remembered what God had done for him in the past. He was determined to obey God, and he had faith in God. You see, Joshua had remembered what God had done for him in the past. He witnessed God's protection firsthand for himself when God led them through the Red Sea and how God protected them throughout their journey in the wilderness. Joshua was determined to obey God. God had promised to deliver the Israelites to the promised land, and Joshua wanted to make it there. He wanted the reward that came through obedience to God. Joshua trusted God at his word. He knew that God was the only true God. Joshua knew that God would be with him and not forsake him, just as he was with Moses. He was faithful because of how God had led them in the past and knew that God would deliver them to the promised land. In the end, Joshua's courage was rewarded. None of the adult Israelites, and not all the children of Israel that left Egypt, got to go to the promised land. Joshua entered the promised land and lived to be 110 before he died. He gained the reputation of a strong and influential leader. His story is that of faith and courage, despite the many battles he faced. God had given him a heart of courage to lead. On January 2nd, 2007, Wesley Autry and his two daughters noticed another man, Cameron Hollopeter, collapse into a seizure on a subway. He, alongside two other women, ran over to help him. Cameron got up with their help, but still being disoriented, he fell on the train tracks. At that moment, a train was heading straight for Cameron. Wesley jumped onto the tracks and covered him with his body and pushed him down into the gaps between the tracks. The train couldn't stop on time and rolled over Wesley and Cameron. Eventually, Wesley yelled from beneath that both men were fine. Cameron went to the hospital, and Wesley checked on him. Wesley insisted to everyone that he was fine, and the next day at work, he was humble about the whole thing. What a courageous man. Like Joshua, we are given opportunities throughout our lives to demonstrate courage. Each challenge becomes a test of our faith and character. Pathfinders, let us leave church reminded that courage is of God. We, too, have been commanded by God to be strong and courageous in difficulties. God is faithful. He will give us strength to stand courageously in our faith.
Hello, everyone. My name is Aiden Smith-Holness, and I'll be talking about oneness with God. You can achieve oneness with God. Ask our friend Gideon. I'd like to tell you about the time I first caught a football in after-school care. I was in second grade at J&A, and I really wanted to be like the older kids, and it looked super easy. So I asked to play, and the older kids finally agreed. The first few times they threw the ball to me, I couldn't catch it, but they kept telling me that I could do it. I had faith in myself that I could also do it. So during the next play, I ran out past all the defenders to receive the ball. Then the quarterback threw it. I managed to catch the ball, but it hit me in the face first. Me catching the football didn't just mean that I had faith in myself and that I was proud of what I had accomplished by staying focused and determined, but I also had to have faith in God to accomplish this first great feat or great task. I'll be referring to the idea of oneness today. But what is the definition of the oneness? The dictionary defines oneness as the identity or harmony with someone or something, and the fact or state of being one in number. For instance, I'm all sure that we have a belief in oneness of God. I was asked to talk to you all today about a number of Bible characters who exhibited this notion of oneness, and I decided to focus on Gideon. Here's my interpretation of Gideon and his story. The story of Gideon is found in Judges. If you turn to Judges 6, verses 6 to 10, you will see that Gideon's story begins with God not being happy with his people, the Israelites. The Israelites were the ones that God saved from Pharaoh and the people that Moses led across the Red Sea on dry ground. Many years passed since all of that, but throughout all of God's miracles the Israelites experienced, they still did evil in the sight of the Lord. It seemed like God gave them everything, yet they still turned their backs on him anyways. There were consequences for these actions. When the Israelites did something wrong, God didn't bless them, but gave them into the hands of the Midianites. The Midianites were not nice to the Israelites. They took or ruined their crops and animals, and the Israelites had to hide from them in their caves. The Israelites had nothing left, so they cried out to God for help. God heard their cry and had a plan. Why God is so good is that he wasn't happy with the Israelites' actions yet. He listened to them anyways and answered their prayers. It is in Judges 6, verses 11 to 24, where Gideon is told he will break the control of the Midianites. This is Gideon's first step in oneness with God. Eventually, Gideon would renew his relationship with the one living God of heaven. So enter Gideon. Gideon was working with wheat in a hidden place so that the Midianites wouldn't find him and steal the wheat. Then the angel of the Lord came down and sat next to him. The angel said, "The Lord is with you, warrior." Gideon said to the angel, "If the Lord is with us, why are all these bad things happening? What happened to all the miracles that our fathers have told us about?" Then the Lord replied to Gideon, "Go with all your strength and save Israel from the Midianites. I want you to do this." But Gideon was full of excuses and didn't want to get involved. He said, "But Lord, how can I save Israel? We are weak, and I'm the smallest and the youngest of my family." God said, "I will be with you, and we will slay the Midianites together." Gideon asked God for a sign. He wanted to be sure he was really talking to God, or if he was just talking to himself. Gideon didn't have a Bible to follow and didn't know if it was common for God to be walking around talking to random people. So he wanted to be sure. So first he prepared an altar as an offering to God. He set his offering of meat and bread down on a rock, and fire came from the rock, completely consuming the meat and the bread. The angel of the Lord disappeared. That awesome fire, consuming his offering, convinced Gideon that it was the angel of the Lord he was talking to. Judges 6, verses 22 to 23 says, "And when Gideon perceived that he was the angel of the Lord, Gideon said, 'Alas, O Lord God, for because I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face.' And the Lord said unto him, 'Peace be unto thee, fear not, thou shalt not die.'" Here is Gideon's second step in oneness with God. He does what God says, even though it would anger his people, but he was given a job. That night, the Lord told Gideon to take down the altars his father and others built for a fake god that they called Baal. The oneness that was previously established was broken by the children of Israel because they worshiped fake gods. Gideon's father wasn't the only one who worshiped a fake god, but all Israelites started believing in false gods also. This is why God was mad. Why couldn't the people realize that there is only one true, living and breathing God of Israel? These fake gods were nothing but statues and blocks of wood that can't hear or do anything. Anyway, the Israelites were upset when they realized that Gideon had destroyed their altars and groves, but they decided that if the fake god Baal was really a god, he would punish Gideon. Do you all think that anything happened to Gideon? No, nothing happened to Gideon because Baal wasn't real. I'm not sure at this point of the story why Gideon needed another sign from the Lord to prove that he would save the Israelites, but he did. So this time, Gideon put a piece of wool from a sheep on the ground. If there was wetness on the fleece and all the ground around it was dry, then he would be assured that God would save them. What do you all think happened? Was the wool wet or dry? Did God give Gideon the sign he wanted? Yes, Gideon got the sign. But again, Gideon needed to be reassured that oneness he established with God was real. And sometimes we need the reassurance, which is established in prayer, with God to maintain that oneness. So Gideon asked that the wool would be dry and the ground around it would be wet. Well, sure enough, the next morning, it was just as Gideon had asked. This is my favorite part of the story, and the reason why I asked to speak to you all today: the power of oneness. Gideon got himself an army and had lots of men to help him fight, and God had his back as he promised. Gideon was pumped and ready to go. But hold fast, everyone. The Lord had another plan. God told Gideon he had way too many men in his army. God knew that the Israelites would think that they slain the Midianites all on their own without the help of God. Gideon got his bubble burst. Why? Because God said, "Gideon, tell the people that if anyone here is afraid to fight, go home." Well, actually, a lot of people left. 22,000 people actually left. That was over half of the entire army. So 10,000 brave men were left. Gideon's faith could have faded and oneness could have been broken when he lost all those men. Gideon still felt confident and was ready to slay. But hold on, everyone. The Lord told Gideon he still had too many men. So God brought the soldiers down to the water, and the Lord said to Gideon, "Separate those who lap the water from those who kneel to drink." The number of those who drank while keeping guard of their surroundings was 300 men. My dad explained to me that the troops who drank with their hands were ready to fight at a moment's notice. They did not take God for granted, and they were more serious. The rest of the men who kneeled down to drink the water were potentially losing sight of the enemy attacks. The Lord said to Gideon, "With the 300 men who lapped, I will deliver the Midianites into your hands. The rest of your men shall go home." God wanted the Israelites to know that when they won, not if they won, but when they won, that the Israelites would know that God was in control with only 300 men left to fight the vast Midianite army. According to Judges 8:10, there were at least 135,000 troops against Gideon's 300 soldiers. Gideon was confused. He had no earthly idea how God was going to help them win. There were so many Midianites against their puny army. Gideon couldn't sleep and was so worried. Gideon's faith and oneness with God was challenged once again. Gideon's faith needed to be encouraged, but God said, "Trust me, I got this." That night, the Lord spoke to Gideon and said, "If you are still afraid that you won't win, go down in the valley to the camp where the Midianites are staying and listen to what they're saying. You will feel better after that." Did Gideon go eavesdrop? Yep, he did. He overheard two Midianites talking about a dream one of them had. The guy said he dreamt of a round loaf of bread that came rolling into their camp, and it came so fast that it ran right into one of their tents and made it fall over. The other guy said, "This must mean that Gideon and his God are going to defeat us." My dad also explained to me that the dream spoken by the Midianites was actually God. God was speaking to him through the enemy. So Gideon ran right back to his camp and called out to his army, "Get up, the Lord has given us the Midianite camp." Okay, this is the best part now. We are not only talking oneness, but strategy at this point. Gideon divided all of his troops into three groups and gave them trumpets and empty jars with torches inside. Gideon and his men surrounded the camp in three groups. The Midianite camp was in the valley, and Gideon and his men were looking down into the valley. When Gideon started to blow his trumpet, the rest followed. They blew their trumpets and yelled, "For the Lord and for Gideon." Then they broke their jars they were carrying, holding onto the torches with one hand and a trumpet in the other, shouting, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." When the Midianites heard this, they started yelling and running around. Then the trumpets went off once again, and the Midianites started freaking out and turning on each other with their swords. They were killing each other. There were still some of the enemy that got away, but they fled right into the hands of the 30,000 soldiers who were sent home. Talk about oneness. Everyone, this was the day that Gideon and his God defeated the Midianites. It was epic. Word got around that Gideon and his army were fierce, and there were some tribes of Israel that wanted to sabotage Gideon's army by not feeding them. Oneness wins again. Gideon and his army came back and defeated them too. Gideon's victory won the respect of the Hebrew nation. They wanted him to become their king and lead the country, but Gideon refused, saying that God would lead Israel. Who knew that an army of 300 against a massive Midianite army could come out victorious? Who knew that the Israelites would come together for a common good? Who knew that the fear of Gideon and his men was so great that Israel lived in peace and worshiped God and not those fake gods for the next 40 years? God did. In their oneness with God, the Israelites enjoyed those 40 years of peace. Without God, the Israelites could not be saved. Without God, nothing could be possible. Without God, we would not have the strength, the intelligence, the love, and the wonderful life that we are living today. The takeaway lesson from the story of Gideon is that we need to trust him every step of the way, and we need to be obedient. We don't need to put God to the test to know that he is there and has our backs. He is accomplishing his purpose on earth through men, women, and pathfinders like us. Gideon was strong, and we are strong because of the power of God. You have heard me use oneness, but understand that oneness is a personal abiding faith and relationship with God. It is something we share as a church family. And going on in these trying times, we have to rely on it to bring us to the very end when we meet our Savior in the sky. May we all share in this faith, and I pray we will all be ready when he comes. I would like to leave you with this, my Pathfinder friends and church family. George Mueller, who was a Christian evangelist, said, "Faith does not operate in the realm of the possible. There is no glory for God in that which is humanly possible. Faith begins where man's power ends. Amen.